in this verse that we just chanted, Bhagavad Gita, the great scripture of mankind, is termed as our mother. And this very caring, very loving mother, what does it do? It is described that it is Bhavadvaishini, means the one, you can see the translations that you have there on your sheets. It means it hates this world of duality, this creation, which is not real. Hates in the sense, it hates, it does not like that we are being buffeted in this unreality. And there is no cessation of suffering or pain while we are stuck in it. And so it takes up this task like a very loving, caring mother to take us out of this terrible mire that we are in it. There is no way that you can make this a nice place. You can try, but we will see that every pleasure has a painful counterpart. Every smile has a tear to balance it. It is not possible here to go beyond these ideas of pleasure and pain and so forth. And thus we will get buffeted, kicked around like a soccer ball from place to place in this world. There is no escape unless we learn the truth. And that truth Bhagavad Gita describes there in that beautiful opening chant as what she, that mother does, Advaitamrita Varshini, that this great mother, she showers the nectar of non-duality. Non-duality is the word used to indicate that absolute oneness of existence. It is to show that it is not numerical one. Vedanta likes to use the word Advaita, the absence of duality. It is a numerical one, means, well, there is one, there is two, there is three, like that. But it is beyond numbers, and so it is called one without second or non-dual. In this non-duality, these waves of coming and going need to be merged. Need to be merged means not that they will be merging as such, but we have to see the one ocean on which these are rising and falling. The waves, there is no permanence about it. Like our lives, we keep on seeking permanence and steadiness, but as waves there is no permanence. Its very nature means to rise and keep on changing and fall. It rises from that one. It is always in that one, and again merges in that one. So, to look at that ocean is the true solution for our problems, and this great mother is pointing out to us that solution. And in various ways, it needs to be imprinted on us. We need to get this understanding not only in our intellect, but it should be at the experiential level. Then only it becomes useful and practicable. So therefore, various doubts and obstacles that come to us, they are being removed, as we have always been reminding ourselves here. Let us note that again, that it is Brahma Vidya and Yoga Shastra, means it is a knowledge, intellectually convincing, intellectually satisfying vidya or knowledge, but that's not enough. It is yoga shastra, means that which is understood as an intellectually convincing concept needs to become the practical, tangible, verifiable experience. This is what is called yoga. So yoga is making this knowledge seep into us, get into every drop of our blood, let it get into all our nervous system and become then our life. So then only it becomes useful. A great work by Shankaracharya, Vivek Chudamani, the crest jewel of discernment. It says that somebody has a big treasure, a lot of gold and diamonds and all these precious gems in a big container, but that is buried deep under the soil. And this person doesn't know about it. And so is living in utter poverty. But somebody informs, well, you know, look, there is this great treasure hidden, buried under the ground that is there. It is right in your compound. Why don't you take it out? Now, this knowledge of it is one aspect. Yes, yes. Oh, I see, it's there. But now, if that person just knows it and does not dig the ground and take it out, it is of no use really. This knowledge is of not much utility to actually practically get rid of the poverty that the person is living in. So, to actually get rid of the poverty, the fellow has to work to, you know, remove the covering on this treasure. So much of digging has to be done, the container has to be taken out and so forth. So also, knowing that we are really immortal, ever blissful, ever perfect, will not actually make us perfect unless we connect to it. Our life has to get connected to that reality rather than getting connected to the shifting body. When it is connected to the shifting body, we become, you know, connected to all the ups and downs of the body. The body by very nature is sometimes in good health, sometimes in not good health. So I am connected to body, I identify myself with body, so automatically I say that the body is sick. No, I am sick. It is, I am 6 foot tall or 5 foot tall or whatever. It is now the size of the body, it becomes my size because I identify with body. So, instead of that, the identification should shift to the self that is always there, that is unchanging something. So, you have to examine what is changing and what is unchanging. And to give this understanding a big boost and make it practically implementable. This 15th chapter is very useful that we have been studying for last 3-4 classes. That this 15th chapter tells with a very good analogy. It calls that word Purusha. Purusha means indweller, the one who dwells inside. Like somebody is in a house or in a car or so forth. It is now that car or the house is not that person. The house is under repairs doesn't mean that the person living inside is under repairs. And the person is the dweller, and the house is shifting, changing, if you don't like the house or you need to go to some other place, you dispose of that house and get to another house. Our friends from Connecticut, they just did like that. So it's they changed that because it was needed to get to some other place. But they know that the same person who was living in Connecticut is living now in Rhode Island. Now, the same idea is to be put about the body also. Understand it with body, that the body is not I. It also keeps on changing. And so, the one who is dwelling in the body, concentrate on that. And when one gets an understanding of a transcendental self, that one reality that transcends our physicality, which is a changing thing, we go a long distance in spiritual life. It is the first thing that one has to do to become a spiritual person, to transcend physicality. A physical life and a spiritual life. It is not that by closing the eyes and sitting cross-legged for a long time one automatically becomes spiritual. No, that's not the way to become spiritual. A practice of meditation may require or may be helped by sitting like that, but a main requirement is to shifting the identity. Not with the it has to be cut from the body and cut from whatever is changing and join with the unchanging, the indweller. That is why this word indweller, Purusha, and this chapter is called Purushottam Yoga. The joining with our innermost true being or true self. And the great analogy that was given to this whole universe was like a tree. A tree like the Banyan tree, which has its root up and the branches going down, an inverted tree. So the up is to show that it is the supreme. So that root that is divine, from which all this universe comes. The upside down is also shown that what you see here is a reversal. It is in Maya, in ignorance everything becomes reversed. Really the root is up. But here we see that the roots of the tree, they are down and the branches go up. Because this is an inverted vision. In ignorance, everything is just changed. The root is not seen. The branches and the leaves and everything is seen. This world is seen. The God is not seen. The root, the God or our true self is not seen. And we question, is God there? Well, if there is the roots, has to be there if the branches and these leaves and fruits and flowers are there. Do you ever question when you see a tree that there are branches, leaves, fruits, flowers, all that is there? And do you ever get this question? That whether there is root or not, if the tree is there, you automatically take it for granted that, what, Lakshmanji, root has to be there, is it not? Without the root, there cannot be any tree there. You have a complete, total conviction of this. So also, all this appearance, this big tree, it has the root. And this tree keeps on expanding and getting the new branches. It is fed by these karma that we do. and then the entanglement with that goes on. So this tree is the cause of our bondage, and thus we have to cut this. And how it is to be cut? And then it is told, asanga shastrena dridena chitva, as these acts of non-attachment has to be held, and to be held firmly, dridena. And with that, this tree will get cut. What is this idea of non-attachment? Sri Ramakrishna puts it so beautifully and in a very straightforward, simple way, that know that nothing is yours, that nothing belongs to you. Even the body that you think that it is mine, does it really belong to you? What can you control about it? Jesus said it so correctly, that can you make one hair black or white on your own head? You cannot do even that much. And why do you say? You may apply paint and all that, that is a different thing. You can dye the hair. Does it make black and white like that? It is. That also you don't have much power about. So nothing in this world is really mine. And this understanding has to come. Because of that thinking that certain things are mine, certain things are not mine, we get entangled into this world. So detachment or non-attachment is to be practiced in this, and that consists of the major principle of spiritual, what is called sadhana or practice, that is developing this idea, nothing is mine, everything belongs to God. And that is what Jesus says, like kingdom of heaven. That is not your kingdom, but the kingdom of God. So everything belongs to God. All belongs to God. No, nothing belongs to you. Whenever something you know as belongs to you, the attachment develops. You can see that. My husband or my wife, attachment develops. If it is somebody whom with you are not connected, there is no attachment. Mine becomes then attached. If some car gets hit, you are not worried. My, then immediately the worries start coming up. So it is mine or not mine, that is the question. It was really a thing happened here a few years ago. Some man was actually very concerned that who really hit my car, it has a dent here, and how it is to, and then he tried to open the car and it was not getting open. So he thought that it must be terribly damaged. But then after more examination, it dawned that it was not his car. It looked similar, but it was not his car. And then all the worries about it, they also dissolved. So here we feel that this is my son. Start worrying about it. It is a big problem with parents. That their kids go to school and can't do much about anything, but still keep on worrying, thinking. At the school, many times the kids say that, well, my mom keeps on calling me every day, not once, twice, thrice, and nothing much. She keeps on asking the same thing, did you eat, and so forth. So, it is this, because mine, you know, it is as soon as that idea mine comes, it becomes an attachment, it becomes a bondage. So practice that it is not mine, because that is the truth. How it becomes yours? there is no really rational to think that something belongs to you. Absolutely no rational to say that something is mine. And therefore, as soon as we say something is mine, that becomes my bondage. My house, okay, my prison really. What is the difference between prison and a house? That prison and house both are dwelling places. In prison really you don't have to pay mortgage, that's all. Somebody told the difference that you don't pay mortgage if you are in prison. In house you have to pay. But the difference is that you can go out from the house whenever you need or whenever you want. In prison, if you are serving a term in prison, then you don't have the freedom there. If you are given that sentence to be there for say 5 years, and if you think that, well, enough, you know, it is after 3 days, I am getting kind of bored here, let me go out. No, you are not able to go out. And whatever we call mine, we cannot get out of it. That is our prison. So this is to be therefore cut, and it requires determination. And determination is very necessary in spiritual life. If we want to do, we intellectually many times think, yes, I must detach. But then you may, you know, take up the axe to cut everything. But then the thought comes. It is not a thought really. It is in our Hindi language. There was a very nice one. Swami was explaining this. And in Hindi, thought is called vichar. That this is. And then he said that this is not vichar, this is not thought, it is a vikar. This is, vikar means it is a distortion. This vikar is appearing as vichar. This distortion is making an appearance of thought. You are really not thinking there. It is the weakness that is making you distort the things. And you would say, oh, how can I get detached from this person? Who will take care of that person if I get detached? As if you are taking care. Can you take care of yourself, your body? That also you cannot do. But we labor under this terrible mistake that I will take care of that person. Who are you to take care of it? As Sri Ramakrishna used to say, do your duty in a detached way. That serves somebody. That is fine. You serve somebody. Don't say it's mine. Say mine and you get caught. So nothing belongs to you. That is, and hold this thought very firmly. Nothing belongs to me. It is my son or daughter or whatever, my wife, husband or other social connections, they are the objects for my service. And let me see the embodiment, them as embodiment of God and serve them without ever thinking that they belong to me or they are mine. No. If you still emotionally want somebody to be yours, if we emotionally want always that somebody should be mine, it is difficult to hold on to the idea that nobody is mine. Okay, if we need somebody to hold on to as mine, tell ourselves, let us tell ourselves, God alone is mine. God alone is mine. Nobody else is mine. Others, they are, you know, temporarily yours. You think they are associated with you. They come and go. They are not really mine. God alone is mine. So it has to be held firmly, this acts of detachment. Then the tree gets cut. Somebody was telling, it's a joke, that how you connect to God. So there was a question. And these days we send emails. So can we send email to God? And the answer is yes, but without attachment. Don't send attachment with your email to God. So it is. Then otherwise it will go into junk folder. God will not open it. So you have to send the email, but no attachment with it. Just send. So then it gets opened there. So practice this detachment. That is the idea. And then it is with that detachment, it was told, now you have to keep on concentrating on your true nature. Tat padam, tat parimargitavyam, yasmin gata nivartanti bhuyah. That it is told that is the true nature of yours. Focus on that. That tatha padam. Padam means that is the goal. Padaniyam iti padam in Sanskrit says that which is to be reached, that is called padam. So you have, that is the destination of life. With the Vedanta philosophy, and in fact the very idea of religion has this thought about life. Every religion has this idea that life is to be taken up as journey. Not just roaming about, but journey. And the difference in just roaming about and journey is that a destination. That journey means you are going somewhere, and take up the life in that sense. What is the destination? The padam, that ultimate reality. Why? Because there alone, like when you finish your journey, suppose it is a long, tedious journey, it is, once we were on a car trip, and then lost the way here, there, and anyway it was long, and then made more tedious because of losing the way. So, and not enough food to get, and when we ultimately reached, the sense of relief. Now we are there, the journey is done, we are back home. As home, sweet home. And they say sweet home, that you get into that home. That is the sweet. Because it says that why that is the destination, that then you don't have to come back to this world again. It is done. You have achieved everything. There is nothing left to be achieved anymore. Whatever has to be done has been done. Whatever is to be accomplished, that has been accomplished. And that should be the goal. All other things that one sees as goals really do not have any permanent or the ultimate value. And they may be temporary objectives. I want to go to the doctor because I have got cough. So okay, but that is not the ultimate goal. You don't go and stick there with the doctor, that doctor gives you prescription or something, and then you come back. So every other objective that we consider in this world, that doesn't fulfill us. We come back from there, look for something else. Only this is the objective, to realize ourselves. All other things may give temporary titillation. And when that's over, you have to find out something else. So So, therefore, what is the destination that what is the root cause of this whole universe, what is our true self, that is the destination, and that needs to be assiduously, this journey is to be taken up without attachment. So that needs to be, you know, kept in the in our understanding always, that no attachment. Like on the journey you come across many things, but you need something of that from, like you need some food, you need to put gas and so forth, so you go there. But after the that particular purpose is done, you again go to on your journey. So similarly, we require gas for this car called body, that is food. So it is that is the we need that, fine, but don't live for eating. Eating for living, fine, but then living just for eating means you buy the car just for filling gas in it. Don't go anywhere, and just from home to gas station to home, that's about it. So it is, if we are living just for eating, then it is life like that. So this is to be held on to, that this is none of these. Becoming a very famous person, name and fame is a big attraction. Let me become that big celebrity. Well, that is not the purpose of life. You cannot really be fulfilled by that. And it is very easy to see. There are so many celebrities that we know. Are their lives fulfilled? Even though they became certainly celebrities, was their life fulfilled? And if not, then you can easily see that my becoming celebrity is not going to fulfill my life. Many of them committed suicides and terrible depressions. And so, it is, therefore one has to know, is that getting the moneyed person my goal, a very wealthy person? And no, cannot be. Because we see the lives of so many wealthy people. Are they lives of fulfillment? Certainly not. And therefore, we have to remind this, that that is the goal. Tat padam parimargitavyam. And this word is so beautiful, parimargitavyam. Very difficult to actually translate. The one single small word, but so many shades of meaning have been compressed into this word, parimargitavyam, means has to be sought in the journey. You have to go on journeying towards it in every moment. That is the idea behind this prefix, pari. That whatever other things you might be doing in life, all must be tuned to this goal, this destination, this effort of moving forward towards that goal. That should never be lost sight of. It is, if we are undertaking any important endeavor, then we see that all our other activities, not that we don't sleep, not that we don't eat, not that we do not do many other things, that, but all are tuned to that one ideal. That I know sometimes back one of our a family wanted to go to, they undertook the big trip to go to Kailash walking. So for about a year or so, and they were, not that they were not eating, but they were eating with this idea that I have to keep my body in trim condition, light, healthy. And so the eating habits were changed. All those things that you like normally, they also liked. But They knew that if they go after those, then they will not be able to undertake this tedious and very hard journey at that height. So they controlled their eating, they maintained the exercise schedules and everything. Why? Not for its own sake, but for the sake of that goal. So it is, if we have a goal, then all our actions get attuned to that. That is called Parimargitavyam. And why this is the goal, that is told in the that next line, that getting which nothing more remains to be achieved. That sense of complete, total fulfillment. I remember, and I had told in this class a few times, that in one college, this topic was being discussed by a Swami. Not exactly these verses, but this idea of ultimate fulfillment. And I was there at that time, that college student. And so, after the lecture, somebody asked a question. It was open for question answer sessions. And so one brilliant student asked this question, that okay, suppose that person becomes then now a fulfilled person, has attained everything to be attained. Now then, okay, then what next? What next? And the Swami's response was wonderful. He said, well, I ask you, what next? That is the stage, the only stage where the what next gets completely answered. There is no next there. That is the meaning of fulfillment. If there is still next, that means there is no fulfillment. Everything else in our life has what next, because that is not fulfillment. And therefore, we have to say that there is no next here. That is done. That's it. Nothing more than that. It is finished. The journey is over. And you are now the fulfilled person. Swami Vivekananda says that what if you are everything? Imagine, even just think that you are everything. What more is to be attained? You are already that. You are already everything. No desires can be there at all. There is nothing else present. And therefore, there is no further achievement possible. That is therefore the destination. So, yasmin gata na nivartanti bhuyah. And now, the next line that we were saying again last time, I am repeating because of the importance of this, these two verses, that you have to surrender yourself to that. That is the way to go about. It is not on the basis of my ego that we can achieve this. Tame vachadyam purusham prapadye yata pravritti prasrita purhani. That this, the waves, what is the wait for the wave to know that it is ocean? Take refuge in ocean, from which all these waves are coming up. So, I take refuge in that. Keeping the ego is going exactly in the opposite direction. I will do this. Why? I want to realize God. Okay. Yes, I will keep on doing my mantra a million times. That will do it. No, you may, has it been told to you that if you do it by a million times, then the God will be coming to you? You may do it million times, 5 million times. The question is that separateness, that ego. That will be the obstacle anyway. you will be a person maybe with some aura around you, that yes, he has performed 1,000,000 times the mantra. So you may have an enhanced ego also, possibly, who knows, that you know, you will go on telling everybody, Charles, do you know that I have done 1,000,000 times mantra? How great I am! It is, that idea may flash, that is just what is going in the opposite direction. So the spiritual practice should be commensurate with the spiritual goal. Our teachers always used to maintain, you see this in Swami Vivekananda's literature very often, that the goal and the means should correspond to each other. If the goal is the realization of totality, then the means should be such that that separateness, the separate I, should be annihilated, should be gone. And the way therefore is to practice this humility with God, that well, prapadye, I take refuge in that ultimate reality. Somebody said that, well, I don't want to take refuge in God. Why should I take refuge in God? Am I not God? You say that you are divine. I am God. Why should I take refuge in God? Well, I said, if we know that, there is no problem, then you won't ask this question. If you don't know, therefore the question comes. If you don't know, see, you are telling, why should I take refuge in God? Anything here and there, and you go and take refuge in your wife. That's all right. But taking refuge in God, you find it difficult. You take refuge in your boss. Go and tell that, oh, my boss, and this has happened. So you take refuge in every little thing of the world. You are a little sick and take refuge in doctor. That is all right. But take refuge in God. Am I not divine? Oh, well, if you know that, you don't need to take refuge in God. It is this separation that is to be renounced, and that is why taking refuge is advocated. And then what is this idea of taking refuge that is so beautifully illustrated in the next verse? Nirmana moha jita sanga dosha adhyatma nitya vinivritta kama dvandvair vimukta sukha dukha sanye gachantya mudha padamavyayam tat. It is the fifth verse that nirmana moha, let me read the translation, free from pride and delusion, overcoming the evil of attachment, ever devoted to spiritual pursuits, rid of desires and the dual throng named pleasure and pain, the wise go to the immutable goal. Very beautifully compressed in this translation, the great idea that is there, that giving up mana means the pride, free from pride and delusion. What is pride and delusion? Many times are shown as combined, because this delusion that I am so and so brings up the pride also associated with it. The pride is not only about being somebody big. The pride could be also about somebody being small. And the pride can be of so many different types. You see, sometimes the pride of being good is there, and pride of being bad is also there. You know, I am a very bad person, don't cross my path. So it is, that is a different thing, you know, that you have the pride of being bad. I allude to many times that nice illustration by one of the sages in Maharashtra. His name was Ramadas Swami. And he says that people can be proud of anything. Whatever is that I am so and so. And then they take pride even that, see, nobody has cough like me. I have the cough, and did you notice the phlegm that comes out of my nose? It is so thick. Nobody has like that. So you can take pride on any silly thing. It is that pride comes from the sense of I am so and so. And then we want to express that sometimes the pride comes, you know, I have no ego at all. One takes pride in that. See, don't say that. I have absolutely no ego, I am telling you. It is now, what is that? It is. One can have ego about not having ego. It is that there is no humble person in the world like me. It is because we want to show that we are big, this spiritual people. So in some sects they tell, and very rightly, that be humble. Now being humble is one thing, and making a show of being humble is quite another thing. So there it is said that in that particular tradition, the devotees, they have a competition as to who is more humble. So he says, I am your servant. I am still lower than you. A competition of being humble goes on. That is not really what is the getting rid of ego. So therefore, nirmana moha, that the sense of pride and sense of a separate individuality, that is the result of delusion, they are to be gotten rid of. Jita sanga doshaha. Earlier it was told of attachment. But how do you know this attachment in us? All the problems that we get in life, like how do we know that there is electricity? Well, all these electrical appliances, they are working. Because of the electricity, they are working. So you know the existence of electricity because of these. That to test whether there is current or not, what do? You put on one of those like lights. You switch on, and if it lights, then you say that there is electricity. If there is no this thing, then that Dayatmananji in that retreat told a nice joke that somebody says, no, I want to actually test whether there is electricity or not. Okay, then go and touch that live 450 volts wire, go and touch it. You will not know, we will know. So it is like that. It is the expressions of this attachment are seen in life. Now, what is attachment, you cannot see, but the results of this attachment are there for everybody to see, how you act because of this attachment. So all those problems that come in life, so therefore dosha, that word is there, which hasn't really come very well in translation, but after all translation has to be limited. So jitta sanga dosha, that you have to conquer all these drawbacks, and which are products of this attachment. And then adhyatma nitya, that is again a very beautiful word and very difficult to translate. Always holding on to the goal in your consciousness. To be spiritual, always, not spiritual while meditating and then forget when you go to your work. No, be spiritual all the time, whether you are eating, whether you are walking, whether you are talking, whether you are at work or at home, whether you are sleeping or whatever. That awareness of the spiritual goal, that has to be present. And that is why the word nitya is put there. Because many times for a little while we become suddenly aware of our spiritual reality. No, I want to do some spiritual practice. Well, it is not that 5 minutes doing. It is a nitya. That this person, therefore, it is not that how can I do spiritual practice all the time? And the question comes, do I not have other things to take care of in life? How can I be spiritual all the time? Well, just as you are doing so many things, continue doing them, but tune them to your goal. Never say anything is mine. Feel the presence of God always. Just as whatever you are doing, you feel I am. Instead of that I am, kick out that little puny ego there and put God there. God is. God is. Or the self is, all pervading self is, whatever. That is the nitya, adhyatma nitya, vinivritta kamaha. All desires have been kicked out from life. And that automatically, we shall continue discussing this verse next time. Now there isn't much time, but just let me explain a couple of words here briefly. That you become free from these dualities, these conflicts, like pleasure and pain. Because your idea is not to run after the pleasures. They come in life. The pleasures and pains, they come to every single person without making any effort. What a great idea, that Prahlada, the story comes in Bhagavata, as a child who is greatly devoted to Lord. He tells his friends and says that, look, we should be practical. Is it practical, is it wise to put in efforts for that which you are anyway going to get? It is useless. It is useless to put in efforts for that which you are anyway going to get. What is anyway we are going to get? Pleasures and pains are a part of our living. They are anyway going to be with you. It is useless, that if you want to go to say, like tomorrow I am going to North Carolina, I am boarding a flight. And after boarding the flight, if I think, I should reach fast and start running in the plane, it is foolish, it doesn't do anything. It only is going to tire me. So, pleasure and pains are something you are going to get automatically. So, let that not be your concerns. They will come, they will go. No pleasure remains, no pain remains either. It is, therefore, forget that and you go to that place where there is no delusion anymore. We shall continue to discuss that by the grace of God on next Friday. Any questions about today's discussion? So we shall conclude with the closing prayers. गीता सुगीता कर्तव्या किमन्यत् शास्त्र विस्तरे या स्वयं पद्मनाभस्य मुख पद्मात् विनिसृता एकं शास्त्रं देवकी पुत्र गीतं एको देवो देवकी पुत्र एव एको मन्त्रः तस्य नामानि यानि कर्माप्येकं तस्य देवस्य सेवा श्रीकृष्णार्पणमस्तु। As you already, many of you at least are aware, this Sunday we have a special lecture, a guest speaker, Pravrajika Geeta Prana, a wonderful nun from our order, who is in the upstate New York in the Vivekananda retreat, Ridley Manor. She will be giving this Sunday discourse on mother worship. At 5 p.m. So please try to come for that. That's about it. And then there is the next retreat coming up on the last Saturday of this month, that is 27th. That retreat will be given by Swami Ishtananda from Florida. But to attend it, one has to register. You can register in the office, in the book room there. Also, you can register online. Then there is a music concert coming Saturday, not tomorrow, the next Saturday on 13th. You can attend that too. You will see the description of that on the notice board outside. Thank you, friends.